Bladen, everybody. Welcome on into the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by NumberFire. That is right here on NumberFire.com. And of course, the NumberFire Podcast Network, as we are taking a look ahead to week 15 of the NFL season and breaking down the main slate and all you need to know before you set your DFS lineups. My name is Jim Sonnes. I am a senior writer and analyst for NumberFire.com. Joined here, as always, by Brandon Gadula. He is a senior editor and analyst for NumberFire. Brandon, week 15 is here. We got a Thursday game. We got Saturday games. The main slate. Interesting. How you doing today?
I am doing right now. I think the word I could use is tranquil. I feel at peace. I handed in my start sit article for NumberFire. I got all my notes typed up for the podcast. And once this podcast hits, I just feel a little bit more at ease because I get to talk about my thoughts on the slate with you.
And you're done, basically. Like, you don't have to worry about start sit anymore. You get the podcast done. Like, that post-pod feeling is like unrivaled, especially once we get this deep in the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great job. It's not a hard job, but it's always a demanding job to cover every single angle that there is to cover about the NFL.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, it's definitely like, you know, it's a dream job for sure. But like, you know, at this point of the year, like, our brains have been functioning for a very long time. But like, I think it does help when this week 15 main slate has a composition to it that I think is logical, but also, at least based on initial, you know, sentiment on fan share, doesn't seem to be super popular. It seems like this week the go-to strategy for me is going to be to stack Steelers Patriots and go from there. And neither Ben Roethlisberger nor Tom Brady has gotten a ton of buzz this week. That'll likely change before Sunday. But I don't think it's a situation, Brandon, where we need to avoid this game because it's too popular. Are you getting the same kind of vibe?
Yeah, I assume that everyone would sort of start there. And again, it's Thursday morning. It can very easily sort of get more popular throughout the week. I know, you know, not trying to brag, but there wasn't a whole lot of buzz on Tom Brady last week. And I think all of it came from us on FanShare.
There were 5 total tags on Tom Brady on Sunday morning. One of them was not NumberFire. I don't recall what it was, but the other 4 were all NumberFire. 3 of them were from either me or you. The other one was a different piece on NumberFire. So, like, you can find plays that aren't stupid that are still contrarian, and I think that's kind of the key takeaway there. And I think that, like, it just makes sense to stack up this game. Again, I think that'll change before we get to Sunday. I think that people will eventually gravitate towards this game. But anytime, Brandon, you can use a quarterback in a game with a total of 38.5 instead of one in a total with a total of 52, you got to do it. So I think that that's the way the slate is shaping up here. Let's start things off with the injury discussion for week number 15, starting off with James Conner. He was unable to practice Wednesday due to his ankle injury. Ben Roethlisberger also sat, but he is expected to be able to play through a rib injury. We'll talk about Jalen Samuels and the rest of the Steelers in the trend section. The Ravens announced that Lamar Jackson will be their starting quarterback this week, even with Joe Flacco cleared to play and back up. We'll talk more about this offense against Tampa Bay in the trend section because they have one of the highest implied totals on the main slate as well. Odell Beckham was able to get in a limited practice Wednesday after missing week 14 due to a thigh injury. Looks like he should be good to go against the Titans. Brandon, how do you feel about OBJ after missing a game week 14?
I mean, he's always on the radar, and I think that he's always going to be just sort of a prime example of, coming off of injury if nobody's really looking there. Mm-hmm. Just a play who isn't nonsensical, but who's probably going to be overlooked. I can't really ever get overconfident in OBJ now that Saquon's there taking so much of the market share, but I mean, if he's good to go, if he's cleared, especially early in the week, I'll have some tournament shares of him.
Yeah, I think that the most encouraging sign for this offense was last week when they didn't have OBJ and they still scored 40 points in like 2.5 quarters against Washington, which isn't a bad defense. It was partially inflated by Mark Sanchez, but like that was really encouraging. We have not seen that from them in the past. And whenever an offense is expected to do well and they have fantasy relevant pieces like Odell Beckham and Saquon Barkley, I want pieces. And I think this Titans defense is not one we need to fear by any means. So I like both these guys a lot. And I think that Beckham, kind of like you said, is a logical way to pivot off of higher ownership elsewhere. So Beckham, $8,000, pretty fun to me. The Bears defense took a hit this week with slot corner Bryce Callahan going on injured reserve. They face the Packers this week in Chicago. We'll circle back to this game in the section on bookmaker info because it could be an interesting spot for a couple of low-owned plays. LeSean McCoy missed practice Wednesday due to a hamstring issue. Chris Ivory has gotten some decent work this year. He was a full practice on Wednesday. They're favored at home against the Lions. Any consideration for you to using Ivory at minimum price, Brandon?
Not really.
Yeah.
I don't think they can go there.
I'd rather not. I hate that game. We're not going to talk about Josh Allen the rest of the podcast. He is getting a lot of buzz this week. And I've seen the phrase high floor floated around him, and I 100% disagree with that sentiment. I think that he has a very high ceiling, as he has shown recently. But if you look back in his game logs, in the games where he doesn't get rushing production, he flops. Against the Texans, that's a game where he did leave early, so keep that in mind. But four rushes for 20 yards, he had 5.36 FanDuel points. Against the Titans, he had four rushes for 19 yards and a touchdown, but still had just 10.18 FanDuel points. Against Green Bay, five carries for 19 yards, 3.94 points. So he has a high ceiling, but the floor is not high. And when he's going to be highly owned, which seems to be the case for this week, I am inclined to avoid him. Brandon, your thoughts on Josh Allen at $7,600?
Yeah, I don't know the exact number or rate, but a lot of his carries are just scrambles. They're not design plays. And the obvious sort of corollary to Allen is Lamar Jackson, and pretty much all of his carries are design. I think Allen's actually second in overall scrambles on the year, and he obviously didn't play every game.
Right.
So I think that it's just a very different situation, and I don't think that I can't play Josh Allen. I kind of even like some Zay Jones if I'm going to play Josh Allen, but yeah, I don't really see him as a high floor sort of can't miss option.
Yeah, I think that the receivers here are interesting. Isaiah McKenzie, Robert Foster, Zay Jones. I could potentially get interested in them, but I think it's just like, it's worth saying this dude's floor is not high. His ceiling is high because of rushing. But like, if he doesn't run, which he hasn't done in every game this year, things can go badly. So just proceed with caution, I guess, is the kind of the overarching thread there for Josh Allen. Matt Breida was able to get in a limited practice Wednesday, seemingly setting him up for a return this week. Jeffrey Wilson Jr. played well in Breida's absence, but Brandon, can you trust either of those guys, assuming Breida plays against the Seahawks?
No, if they're both healthy. Matt Breida wasn't even really a workhorse with heavy snaps to begin with. I don't see why he would be now with Jeffrey Wilson Jr. playing the way that he has. So if both are active, I don't think I can touch either.
I agree. I think that it's just a good spot to avoid there for sure. In the Week 14 Number Fire Podcast Network free roll, I'm just tired. Again, appropriate for given the time of year it is. Took home the top prize with a score of 198.68. They blew up in the afternoon games with big days out of Juju Smith-Schuster, Amari Cooper, and George Kittle. For that, they get 3 free months of Number Fire Premium Access and a boatload of free FanDuel points to be used on entries. To enter the Week 15 free roll, here is your URL. So again, if you want to enter the Week 15 free roll, go to Chrome or wherever you fill things in. That was well worded. Go to FanDuel.com/league/gym. That is FanDuel.com/league/gym. Despite it being my name, you are not obligated to use Marcus Mariota, so congratulations and you're welcome. FanDuel.com/league/gym to get entered for your chance to win Number Fire Premium and free FanDuel points to be used on entries. FanDuel.com/league/gym. Let's take a look at our trends for week number 15 on the main slate, and we're going to start things off here. Both of our first trends are focusing on that big Sunday afternoon hammer between the Steelers and the Patriots. It is one of only two afternoon games, and it easily has the highest total on the slate. So we're going to talk about this game, try to cover game stacks here, and then go into other trends. Brandon, your first trend is touching on the Steelers side of things, talking about Juju v. Antonio Brown, which has been kind of the hot buzz this week.
Yeah, I mean, if you've been around the Twitterverse, which, I mean, if you're playing DFS heavily, you should be on Twitter just checking some stuff. You've probably seen some chatter about the target market shares for Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster of late. It's actually something that we've alluded to sort of throughout the year, especially on the recap podcasts, you know, namely Antonio Brown's target share. We discussed that on Monday as well. But, you know, this Patriots-Steelers game should be like the game on the main slate. You know, again, it's not really there yet, but I'm assuming it'll get more to that point by Sunday. But on the full season, Antonio Brown has accounted for 26% of the Steelers' targets. Juju is at 24%. That is 11 targets per game versus 10.2 per game. Brown is actually second in targets per game. Juju is seventh. So, I mean, both are elite from a volume standpoint because this is a pretty high volume pass offense. So let's keep that in mind, even though the, you know, target market shares look like they're more sort of both like wide receiver twos or low end wide receiver ones. But I mean, those are great whenever you actually look at the volume in addition to the market shares. If you look at deep targets, which we define at NumberFire as at least 16 yards downfield, those favor Antonio Brown. He has 41% of the deep targets to 29% for Juju. That puts Brown at 2.9 deep targets per game, which is fourth. He is fourth in deep targets. Juju is 18th in deep targets. He's averaging 2.1 per game. The red zone work does favor Smith-Schuster, who has a league-high 27 red zone targets on the year. Brown is tied for 12th with 19 red zone looks. So, I mean, you can split hairs, but either way, the full season marks are very much favorable for both. 4 games ago, however, Smith-Schuster did move more to the outside, and he's since run 39% of his snaps from the slot, compared to about 80% up until that point. In this sample, the targets do favor Juju Smith-Schuster 49-46. The red zone targets are 7-6 for Juju, but the deep targets are still 12-10 for Antonio Brown. So, I mean, we're dealing with two really high leverage workloads. They seem to be cannibalizing each other, but are still very strong when you take into account the volume and the efficiency of this offense. New England is just 18th in adjusted pass defense based on NumberFire's metrics. Roethlisberger has the Steelers sitting 6th offensively in passing efficiency. He's averaged 9.44 yards per attempt en route to 14 touchdowns and 2 picks against bottom half pass defenses this season in his 5 games. That puts him at 0.56 passing net expected points per dropback. Again, that's 0.56 per dropback. The league average is 0.12. So he has been dominant in good matchups. I mean, it's easy to want to buy in here. It seems like the most likely situation is that one of them, probably Antonio Brown, gets shadowed by Stephon Gilmore and the other simply doubled. You know, when you factor in price, I prefer Juju, but, you know, I actually still probably prefer Antonio Brown straight up, given the deep looks, which are more bankable than the red zone work. But, I mean, I don't really have problems with either. So, Jim, how do you rank the two, and are you at all concerned about this matchup?
Not concerned about the matchup. The Patriots have pretty extreme home road splits as a defense, which jives well with the Steelers here being at home. They allowed .135 to Kenny Thrills. They allowed .125 to Corey Davis. Both those games were on the road. They allowed .116 to Keelan Cole and .83 to D.D. Westbrook. So they're good, but they're not a defense I fear by any means, which I think is what you're saying too. But I think as far as the receivers go, if you told me straight up, I would do the same thing as you, where I prefer Antonio Brown straight up, Juju in accounting for price. But I think based on the way that last week went, ownership will likely skew pretty heavily towards Juju Smith-Schuster. Antonio Brown's not going to be like contrarian, but I think between the two, he would probably be the less popular one. So I kind of think I want to have equal amounts of both so that I can have more relative amounts of Antonio Brown at $8,600. So I think I'm probably going to wind up just splitting them down the middle. Like they'll one lineup with Ben and Juju, run it back with Julian Edelman, and then one with Ben and Antonio Brown, run it back with Edelman, kind of do it that way. What do you think about that strategy overall?
Yeah, I think I'll probably, like you, be somewhat close to 50-50 with both of them. I will also have just lineups with each of them stacked with Ben Roethlisberger because they account for so much. They throw so often and they account for so much of their team's just market share. I don't really have any issues with either. Again, I prefer Juju because of the price, but I think Brown, especially with the ownership sort of leverage, I assume he'll be lower owned. Mm-hmm. I like that. And yeah, I'm going to run it back a lot of different ways with the Patriots.
And last week with James Conner out, Jalen Samuels had 7 targets. Vance McDonald had 4. What's your favorite cheap way to get access to this team? Is it Samuels or is it McDonald?
Samuels.
Mm-hmm. I think Samuels is a cash game play if Conner sits.
Yeah.
Just because of the receiving volume.
Yeah. I want to play Vance. It's a shootout, but I mean, he has a red zone target in 4 of his past 5 games, but he plays about 2/3 of the snaps. He's averaged just 5 targets per game over his past 6. It's fine, but I'm not going to get overextended, but Jalen Samuels played 80% of the snaps last week.
Yeah. He's never going to get overextended on a tight end in general. But I think he's cheap access to a fun game, so I'm going to use him at 55. I just prefer Samuels over him. So I think we're on the same page there. So let's talk about the other side of this game here with the Patriots. Their offense has been surging. As mentioned in the recap podcast, the Patriots are cooking. Tom Brady's a great play. We just have to decide which pass catcher to pair him with. The most relevant sample for this team here is what they have done with Josh Gordon starting and with Rob Gronkowski active. And that gives us a 5-game sample on the season. I believe it was like week 6, week 8, and then the past 3 games. In that sample, Edelman does lead the team with 24% of the targets. He's got 17% of the deep targets and 36% of the red zone targets. That is awesome. It makes him a pretty fun play at $7,200. Gronk and Gordon, they both have 18% of the team's targets in this time. Gronk holds a slight edge in both deep targets and red zone targets. Now, Gronk's price did go back up, but it's still acceptable at $6,900. You got the narrative of Gronk at 69. Josh Gordon is appropriately priced at $6,800. Pittsburgh has struggled to stop opposing tight ends this year. They rank 25th in success rate allowed to the position per Brandon's chart. He tweets that weekly, Akadula 13. They've also allowed tons of volume to slot receivers, with Jarvis Landry getting 15 and 12 targets against them. Keenan Allen got 19, Emmanuel Sanders got 12, and Mohamed Sanu had 73 yards and a touchdown. So I think if I'm ranking these guys, I probably put Gronk first because he fills a terrible position. Then I would go with Edelman, followed by Gordon, with Edelman being a cash game consideration and in the same tier for tournaments as Gronk. Gordon, I think, can beat Joe Hayden. It is a tougher matchup for him, so I think that I have him a tier below those two guys. Brandon, what is your order of preference on these 3 pass catchers of the Patriots, and will you use any James White?
my preference is going to be Gronk first, just because he's a tight end. Mm-hmm. Although, not really in love with wide receiver this week. If I'm not paying like top dollar, and not even all of those. I mean, Julio's got Patrick Peterson. We talked about Antonio Brown. Devontae Adams is always just steady, but his matchup's not great. But I mean, I'm going to rank Gronk first regardless, and then it's going to be Edelman. I've loved Julian Edelman's floor and now his ceiling a bit for quite a while, ever since his second game back. And then I would just rank by default Josh Gordon third. As for James White, he played his lowest snap rate last week, 40.2%. His snaps have kind of been going down in Pittsburgh as first in target success rate allowed to running backs. I kind of made the joke on Slack that there's no reason to want to play James White, but this is probably going to be the game where he has his game. I just don't think we can bank on that.
Yeah, he's $6,900 as well on FanDuel, I think. The price would need to be lower for me to love him. I think if there is a path to which he pays off if the Patriots go super pass heavy, but like Rex Burkhead is taking away some snaps and targets from White. That's concerning. So I will probably have like 1 or 2 James White lineups just in case. But like, if you're not rolling out a bunch of lineups, I don't think you need to force him in. And I will be. So like, that's why I can justify to myself getting a couple of shares, but I really can't do more than that. He just doesn't make sense, like logically, compared to the other guys in this offense. Where do you sit on Brady for tournaments?
I love Tom Brady. We talked about it in detail last week. His efficiency has been great. They just run the ball a lot in the red zone. But he actually connected on some of his deeper passes that got
Cordero Patterson. Awesome.
Yeah. It's frustrating, but we know that it's so hard to stack the Patriots because anybody can score a touchdown. So I am not above some naked Tom Brady lineups for tournaments.
All right. I can live with that. Favorite game stack from this game for you? I'll give mine after you go, but I want to hear yours first.
It's probably... I mean, I'm probably going to get pretty heavy on this game, so I could do something weird like Ben Roethlisberger, Antonio Brown, Jalen Samuels, like Julian Edelman or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's pretty similar to mine. I think I prefer Brady because he's cheaper, so I'm probably going to go True. Brady, Edelman, Brown.
Would you stack James White with Tom Brady or Jalen Samuels with Ben Roethlisberger?
Yes to both. I've actually been doing that a lot this year, stacking running backs with quarterbacks, just because in this instance, you don't get access to every touchdown the team scores. So it's not going to play, but that does work for other teams. But like, I'm using those guys because they get work in the passing game. And if Roethlisberger blows up, there's a chance that part of it is due to Samuels. If Brady blows up, there's a chance it's due to White. So yes, I would totally be on board with that. I think for White, I'd almost have to sack him with Brady, honestly.
Yeah.
Or run it back as part of a stack with Roethlisberger.
Yes.
All right, let's move on here to the second trends. Brandon, starting off with the Baltimore Ravens. As mentioned, Wacko for Flacco is gone. He is now the backup for the Ravens, keeping Lamar Jackson as the team's starting quarterback for this week in a pretty good spot against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So, Brandon, break down the spot here for the Ravens, and let me know what you're thinking in this situation here for Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, so head coach John Harbaugh said at a press conference that Joe Flacco is good to go, but that Lamar Jackson is still the team's number one quarterback this week. But that does mean that Joe Flacco is expected to be the backup, and I know that there are a lot of concerns that he will take away some work from Jackson. But since Jackson took over 4 games ago, the Ravens ranked 23rd in passing success rate. They were 25th prior, for some context. They have dropped from 15th to 25th. In passing net expected points per drop back, but their rushing success rate has been 52.7%, which is best in football in that span. Now, I've also seen that, this is sort of a fool's gold start for Jackson because he's played some bad rush defenses, which is true. The Bengals are 29th in number fires adjusted rush defense metric. The Raiders are 30th. The Falcons are 32nd. The Chiefs are 31st, so that's the bottom four. But that doesn't particularly matter this week because the Bucs are only 24th, so they're still really bad. Tampa Bay is also 27th in adjusted pass defense. Jackson takes some shots downfield. He's missed on those, but, I mean, any passing to go along with his rushing, which, again, these are designed runs for Jackson, and this is another good rushing matchup for him. This matters extra to me this week because the Ravens, they had the highest implied total on the main slate. They are now second behind the Patriots. Last time I checked, they are 8-point home favorites, which is a rush first script for them. Jackson has had 16 or more fantasy points in all 4 games, at least 71 rushing yards in all of those to average 83.5 rushing yards per game. I don't particularly think that there's any reason to think that things will go differently for Jackson this week. As far as the running backs go, however, it's pretty tough. Gus Edwards has seen his snap rate drop each week since taking over, 62%, 61.4, then 50.6%, and then 43.7% last week. He's only had about a third of the red zone work as well because Jackson takes some of that. Last week, Kenneth Dixon played 32.4% of the snaps. Ty Montgomery was at 26.7. So again, it's tough. There's coach speak that Dixon will get more usage, but until we see that, it's still just talk to me. And as far as the receivers go, since Jackson started, John Brown and Willie Snead have 18 targets. Michael Crabtree has 17. Brown leads with 31% of the deep throws and 33% of the red zone targets, which is actually a really good share, but it's just 12 red zone targets in that span. So he's back in the lead for me as sort of the only stacking option with Jackson among the wide receivers who, you know, get a matchup with the Bucs 32nd ranked wide receiver defense by target success rate. So Jim, does any of this about the matchup, about how well they've run the ball, does that impact you at all on Jackson? And can you take a shot on any other Raven other than Lamar Jackson?
Yeah, I think with Jackson, I don't really care about his matchup. I think the only thing I care about with him is his implied team total, because with a rushing quarterback, like, the rushing yardage is good. It's awesome. But the cheat code for tournaments is rushing touchdowns. And when they're implied to score 27 points, that is like 3.8, or, you know, not 3.8, but like that's 3.8 potential touchdowns there. And that means he has multiple rushing touchdown upsides. So I think for tournaments, he's awesome. He's really good. I think the concern around Flacco is that if they fall behind in this game and they need to throw, Flacco's probably coming in. That's, I don't care about that for tournaments. Like, that's fine, because if he's bad enough to get sent to the bench, he's probably not going to win you a tournament anyway. So that's fine. But like for cash games, I think that does push me away. As far as the other Ravens, I mean, John Brown's still crazy cheap, and if they do have production through the air, it'll likely be through him. He is $4,800. Kenneth Dixon, like, I like him. He's a very talented player, but he's $5,700, whereas Jalen Samuels is $5,500. I can't justify that in any world. And I love Kenneth Dixon, and I expect him to get more carries this week. And I think that he can do a lot on few carries because he is really, really good and this team is good. But I can't do it when there's Jalen Samuels there. Like, that just doesn't make any sense to me. So no Dixon, no Gus. I haven't used Gus since that the game against the Raiders, because I can't use guys who don't get targets. Dixon can get targets, but I kind of think it's just Lamar Jackson. And maybe, like, if I'm doing five Lamar Jackson lineups, I'd probably put John Brown in two and have the other three be naked. What about for you?
Yeah, I think it's mostly naked Lamar and hope that he cashes in on those rushing touchdowns. And if I'm going to stack him with anybody, it's going to be John Brown. I can't really get to Kenneth Dixon for all the reasons you said, but it's kind of weird that they do have this second highest implied team total at 27 points on the main slate, but it's kind of one player in play.
It's very weird. But, like, so much of the production is through him. And, like, he's really fun. So I hope he does well. He's really fun to watch. He's actually been a better passer this year on a per dropback basis than Josh Allen. So, like, I really want him to succeed because he's fun. That's where I'm at, basically. Let's move on to this, my second trend here, and talk broadly about wide receivers at high ownership, because we know this week that Amari Cooper is going to be very popular. He is $6,600 on FanDuel. He is crazy underpriced for his role. But he's also coming off a huge game. We also know he's going to be super popular. So we have to decide how we want to handle Cooper in tournaments this week. So far this year, there have been five wide receivers who have been on at least 30% of all rosters in the FanDuel Sunday Million. You can get these by being a NumberFire premium subscriber each Monday. Of those five receivers, only two have scored more than 12 FanDuel points. The other three all scored fewer than 1.3 points for every $1,000 in salary, also known as their value, so 1.3x value for those guys. It is worth noting, though, that three of those five games had wind speeds of 10 miles per hour or higher. Two of the busts came in those elevated winds, and Cooper will not deal with that Sunday because he will be beneath a retractable roof. The only receiver to hit 30% ownership this year while playing indoors was Julio Jones in week six. He scored 19.3 points, which is totally acceptable even at his salary. If we lower the ownership here to 20% to get a larger sample, we get 45 wide receivers. Only 27% of them have hit 2x value, with 11% of them hitting 3x value. There were more players who had less than 1x value than who topped 2x value. Of those 13 who failed to hit 1x value, three of those were in domes, including Amari Cooper back in week 11 in Atlanta. On the flip side, though, every single one of the wide receivers who hit 3X value was priced between $6,300 and $6,800. And that's right where Cooper is priced, again, at $6,600. So I think because of this, to me, I think it makes sense that we make sure we have investment in Cooper because there is a decent chance he has a really solid game this week. It is objectively a good spot, and his price is amazing. But with the low hit rate at wide receiver, I also think it's justified to be underweight relative to the field because there is a decent chance that he does bust, and we want to be able to capitalize if that does happen. So, Brandon, where do you sit on Amari Cooper? I think what I'm doing is being underweight while still having exposure. What are you doing with Cooper knowing he'll be likely the most popular player on the main slate?
Yeah, so I've thought about this sort of throughout the week. Whenever I have – look, I'm very sort of chalk-averse whenever I can be. I don't run at every – run away from every obvious play. But if you're going to play a chalky wide receiver, here's what I'm doing with Cooper. I'm going to play him. I'm going to be about equal to the field in what I expect his ownership to be, whatever that sort of ends up being by Sunday. I don't really know off the top of my head where that's going to sort of settle.
I would say 40. But it hasn't happened yet this year, but I think if it's going to happen, it's going to be this week.
Yeah, I'm thinking at least 35 to 40. So yeah. As in the right range as you. But in my Amari Cooper lineups, that is whenever I am going to try to differentiate more than I would otherwise. Sure. I will play guys who are going to be sort of under 5%. Not every player has to be under 5%, but if I can get one or two sort of very low-owned pivots in my Amari Cooper lineups, I think I need to do that. I think it's sort of irresponsible to build an Amari Cooper lineup and just go chalky everywhere else.
I think one
thing if you're playing tournaments.
Yeah. Cash games, he's very much in play, correct?
He's going to be 85% owned in cash games, if not higher.
So I'm cool with using him. Same with you, right?
Yeah. Don't worry about ownership in cash games.
You can. I just wouldn't advise it.
Yeah.
You're going to talk yourself into bad plays if you consider ownership too much in cash.
Especially on this slate where there aren't a lot of wide receivers who you can feel super great about given their prices and matchups.
One thing I will do, which is a strategy you've taught me through golf mostly, is filling out one lineup and just switching out one player. So I will fill out one lineup where I use Amari Cooper and then change it up and use Tyler Boyd instead, or change it up and use Allen Robinson instead and just use that direct pivot there. So I kind of, have the bases covered. I haven't done that a lot this year in NFL. I've done it more in golf and with NASCAR, but I think it does make sense for this specific slate where we know where the chalk is going to be. So I'll be doing that this week for sure. I think he's in play for cash, even in lineups where I have Zeke in cash. But I do think that for tournaments, you just have to ask yourself if you're okay with the risk. Because if you are, cool. He's an objectively good play. If you're not cool with the risk, then proceed as you wish. It's scary, man. He's really good, and it's really fun. Like, the Cowboys are fun to watch now, which is very strange. I hated watching them for so long, but they actually make me happy now.
Are they?
Yeah. They're actually running an efficient offense. They have multiple exciting players. Their market shares are more concentrated now. I really like them. Michael Gallup is fun too. Like, it's fun. Also, Michael Gallup's a good pivot. He's 53. I don't think I'm talking about him in the player picks. I don't think you are either, correct?
No, I'm not. But he's getting deep targets, and he's not great against deep passes. So he's on the radar.
17% of the team's targets since Cooper came over with, I think, 50% of the deep targets, and he has more air yards than Amari Cooper. So I think that he's a very good pivot. I will have more Amari Cooper, but I think that Michael Gallup is a very good pivot. Let's stick with this game, Brandon, and talk about the other side, because Dallas's pace in the past has made us hyper-averse to using pieces against them, but they're facing the Colts this week, and the Colts are kind of this offense I view as being matchup-proof. So I want to hear your thoughts here on the Cowboys' pace this year and how we should handle the Colts who are facing this Cowboys team.
Yeah, so I mean, on the main slate, there is the Steelers-Patriots. That total is 52 points. Then Next highest is this game, Indy and Dallas at 47. And there's like three at about 45 to 46 and a half. But like this game's kind of the second most obvious place to look. And I really want to dig in. You know, we discussed Amari Cooper. You mentioned Michael Gallup, who I wanted to touch on for sure. We know Ezekiel Elliott is a great play, but the Cowboys pace is just, it's something that I just need to dig into every now and again. And, you know, they've been known to run a really slow pace over the past few years, from 2014 through 2016. So 3 years, they were 31st or 32nd in seconds per play. So last or dead last. By Football Outsider situation neutral pace, they were 30th or 31st in all of those three seasons. Last year, they got up to 19th in both situation neutral pace and raw seconds per play. This season, they are 28th in seconds per play, but 22nd in situation neutral pace. So still below average, which they've been for at least 5 years now running. Now, if we look at things from sort of how they've impacted their plays faced this year, which is why I wanted to dig in and see what the Colts are getting themselves into. They face the fourth fewest plays defensively, 59.5 per game. The Lions are last at 58.3 on the year. But over the past five games, they've faced an average of 55 plays, which would be last in that span and last on the full year by about 3.5 plays. That may not matter if the Colts can limit their ability to sort of control the clock, move the chains, but Indy's 25th in adjusted pass defense based on number fires metrics. They are 7th in adjusted rush defense, but still they are 25th in overall success rate allowed. And success rate just means moving the chains, basically. And the Cowboys can certainly bleed the clock out. Even though they've been fun, they have some good assets, they're still able to sort of suck some value out of the opposing offenses. So that's just not really like the right recipe to take the Cowboys and make them just be extremely pass heavy. The Colts, though, can ramp it up. They are first in seconds per play. They are second in situation neutral pace, but Dallas is actually a good defense. They are 7th in adjusted defense overall, 14th in adjusted pass defense, 2nd in adjusted rush defense. You know, Indy had tried to run it a bit more in the middle of the season when Marlon Mack was getting fed, but you know, they're still 2nd overall in pass rate in one possession games. You know, so there are both sort of a lot of, there are paths to a lot of plays in this game. There are paths to very few plays in this game. It doesn't bother me about Ezekiel Elliott or Amari Cooper or even Dak Prescott, but I mean, so few games are stackable this week with a lot of confidence. This should be one, if not for Dallas's ability to sort of limit the plays that they face. So, Jim, where do you land on these two contrasting paces in this game, and how does it just sort of impact your overall view on the Colts?
I think this point in the season, I value games where both teams have something on the line. And the Colts and Cowboys, two teams trying to make the playoffs. Cowboys' odds are very high right now. I think the Colts are around 25-ish% or so. Maybe higher than that. I don't know. I was trying to look at this yesterday. But, like, both teams have a shot at the playoffs. And I like that a lot. 27? Yeah.
Something like that.
So, they need a win. The Cowboys can basically clinch the NFC East, I think, with a win this week. So I like that. And I think that this time of the year is where, actually a couple weeks ago, is where I started to shift towards valuing those games as opposed to pace. We saw the Panthers and Seahawks have a shootout despite both those teams being kind of slow. And if you look at Dallas recently, Pat Thorman noted this on his pace column on Pro Football Focus, that they have the 13th highest pass rate over the last 5 weeks. And they were definitely not that prior to the Amari Cooper trade. If you look at the teams they face as far as play volume against, they faced a lot of run-heavy teams, Tennessee, Philadelphia, Atlanta after they'd given up, and then at home against Washington, who can't throw, New Orleans, who for some reason doesn't want to throw, and then Philadelphia in that game last week where it was a heavy play game. So I kind of think I'm willing to overlook it. If this were the premier game on the slate where it was going to be super popular, if it were the Steelers Patriots, I think the pace would give you justification for fading it then, but I don't think it's going to be as popular outside of Amari Cooper. Like, it's going to, people here will be carry ownership, but no one here will be like crazy chalk. So I like T.Y. Hilton. I like Eric Ebron, and I like game stacks here overall. So I'm going to stack it, and it'll be my second most popular stack. I think that's the overall takeaway here for me.
I think like it's certainly not enough to get me off the game, but it might be just enough to where I consider some of these more, you know, I back myself into a corner by saying more. I wanted to say ugly. I don't want more just three. Uglier games. You know, there are quite a few ugly games on the slate, and I think the pace concerns and just assuming that everybody looks at this game second, it might be enough for me to sort of bump it down to be sort of equal to some of these other games, the ones I'm mostly alluding to are like Cincinnati, Oakland, or like Seattle, San Francisco. So I'm still not off of it by any means. I'm still going to play Ebron, Hilton, Luck, all the Cowboys I talked about, but it's a little bit concerning to me still.
I think the overall thread for me is that the playoff implications around it and the motivations of the two teams are going to outweigh concerns for me around ownership and pace. So that's where I wind up overall. Let's move on here to the Minnesota Vikings making a big change this week. They dumped offensive coordinator John DeFilippo after their loss Monday night to the Seahawks, and they've been struggling, so it'd be great to just ignore this team, but they're facing the Dolphins, an exploitable defense, and the Vikings still have 59.4% odds of making the playoffs, according to NumberFire. So this is another game where both teams somehow have playoff aspirations. We got to consider them here. We know Mike Zimmer wants to run the football, which could lead us to Dalvin Cook at $6,200. He has played 77% or more of the snaps in three of the past four games, and he has 15% of the targets in that time. But the Dolphins have allowed the second lowest rushing success rate to opposing backs, according to NumberFire's metrics, and Cook has one of the league's worst success rates as a rusher. So even if the Vikings want to, they may not be able to run the ball. That will not push me off Cook, but it may funnel more volume to the passing offense. And thankfully, things there aren't as bad as they seem. The Vikings are still NumberFire's 15th ranked passing offense, and the Dolphins ranked 29th on the defensive end. They also play worse on the road than at home, and the Patriots shredded them in Miami last week. All of this has just been kind of masked by the Vikings' schedule that they have faced. Three of the Vikings' past four games have come on the road. So three games since their bye have been on the road compared to one at home. Those three road games have come against defenses ranked 2nd, 18th, and 12th, respectively, against the pass. And the two lesser defenses have pretty drastic home road splits in the Patriots and the Seahawks. Now, the Vikings are back at home. In their one recent home game, they faced the league's 24th ranked pass defense, better than the Dolphins, and Cousins still had 342 yards and three touchdowns in that game. Cousins is $7,800, and that's a tiny bit spendy, but in this spot, he has the potential to be low-owned, at home, in a dome, and we know where the ball is going in this offense. I am inclined to buy them on a bounce back here. That means Cousins, Diggs, Thielen, Dalvin Cook. Brandon, are you willing to take a stab at the Vikings, or does the change at coordinator give you too much pause?
I love Kirk Cousins. I love Dalvin Cook. I love Adam Thielen. I don't love Stephon Diggs, but I certainly will have some exposure to him. I think that this offense is going to be sort of forgotten about. Kirk Cousins is not getting much sentiment. He's been very good against sort of where you'd expect him to be good for the most part. He's been good. He's struggled. Yeah. And I mean, this should be a spot where he does well. The Dolphins just 29th in adjusted pass defense. Against the four bottom 12 pass defenses he's faced, Cousins has averaged 0.30 passing that expected points per drop back, 8.16 yards per attempt. League average there is 7.5. I like Cousins. I like this offense a lot.
I think that Stephon Diggs is also predictable. You look at the games where he has struggled. Struggled against New England, Stephon Gilmore was there. He struggled against the Jets with 15 targets and 33 yards, but that game was, I think, 16 to 20 mile-per-hour winds in that one. Against Arizona, Patrick Peterson, he struggled there. Against Buffalo, Tre'Davious White. So Diggs is volatile, but I think that his volatility is predictable. And I think with Xavien Howard missing practice again on Wednesday, if he misses, it's a really good spot for Diggs. I don't think I like him as much as Thielen, but I like him comparable to Thielen. And I don't think Diggs will carry any ownership this week. So I do like Diggs. What are your thoughts on Dalvin?
I love Dalvin. He is just playing all those snaps. He's been getting targets, which I know that they're favorites. So that doesn't really matter, but in the off chance that they do fall behind, I don't worry anymore. He's sort of back to that workhorse that he had been early on last year and early on sort of this year. So I just have no issues with Dalvin. I think he's underpriced. I'm going to have quite a bit of him, and he opens up a lot. And yeah, for Diggs, I mean, Xavien Howard is great, but he just sort of started running again after some knee surgery. So even if he plays, I'm not that concerned.
That's true.
Because Stephon Diggs is, I don't do this. Like, I'm not a film guy. I think there's too much that we don't know about what players are supposed to do when watching film. But I know that he can run routes and make people look silly. And if he's going to face someone who's just had knee surgery, then I think we can buy in on Stephon Diggs.
His film is pornographic. I think you can just say that. Like, that's what it is. His footwork is disgusting. His routes are sweet. So 77 at home in a dome against a bad pass defense that's banged up. Giddy up, man. I think if I had to rank them, I'd probably go Dalvin 1 because he's so cheap, followed by Thielen. I'm going to combine them together because they're kind of like Juju and Antonio Brown, where I like both enough that I'm probably going to just split them down the middle.
What about Rudolph?
Nope.
It's almost Christmas, Jim.
Oh, no, you're right. He does always pop up.
He plays like almost every snap, I think. He runs so many routes. He just doesn't do anything.
He doesn't run routes, Brandon. He trots.
He walks.
He has cement shoes. He has been held to fewer than 20 receiving yards in 4 games this year. 2 of the past 4, which have been when Dalvin Cook has been back.
Miami's 32nd in target success rate allowed to tight ends and 31st in fantasy points per target.
I think they allowed a couple of touchdowns to Logan Thomas, who used to be a quarterback. I know this exists.
Oh, this is good. I'm aware of Rudolph's game.
They resurrected Rob Gronkowski. They undertakered him. Is that a verb? It is now. I'm not going to do it, Brandon, but he's going to score, and I'm going to be very mad about it. Like, I don't get upset on Sundays very often because I'm very at peace with how things are in my life. If he scores twice, I will get very upset. If he scores once, he's going to score 6.5 points on FanDuel, and like, I can live with him doing that. He's not going to get more than 7, so...
I don't know. 2 touchdowns, not out of the question for him this week.
2 touchdowns, 13 FanDuel points. That's the way he goes. Let's move on to your fourth trend. Talk about Russell Wilson. He is bizarro world Josh Allen, I think it's fair to say, where Josh Allen has this wide range of outcomes. Russell Wilson's is pretty narrow, unless he's facing the Vikings. Russ is on the road, facing San Francisco, and your trend is looking at what he has done this year, specifically on the road.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, not every game on the main slate's exciting, but we can't just play, you know, all Steelers and Patriots and all Colts and Cowboys here.
Is that a challenge? Is that a dare? You talk about Russ. I'll build a lineup with just those 2 games. Go ahead.
Okay.
Outside of defense. I'm not doing that.
Yeah. The Seahawks 49ers still doesn't exactly qualify as exciting with a 44-point total, but, you know, like I said, we can't write off every game. It's a pace-up spot for the Seahawks, who are 22nd in situation-neutral pace. The 49ers are 11th on the full season. We know that Wilson's been steady all year, and that's gotten him to the 7th best opponent-adjusted passing offense in the league based on number of fires metrics. Defensively, San Francisco is 26th in adjusted pass defense. The 49ers are also 31st in adjusted yards per attempt allowed. On deep throws, Wilson has 13 touchdowns to just 1 pick on deep throws. 21.2% of his attempts have been at least 16 yards downfield, above the average of around 18%. His best throws, basically a lot of his production, comes on deep passes where San Francisco has been vulnerable. Russ has been hyper-efficient. He gets a good matchup, albeit on the road. Now, on the road, his splits are not great. Wilson has faced 4 top 10 pass defenses by number fires metrics. 3 of those were in the first 4 weeks when he was sacked 14 times in 3 games. In those games, he averaged negative 0.09 passing net expected points per dropback. I don't think I need to clarify that that's terrible, but it's not good whenever your expected points are negative. So I had 8 touchdowns and 3 picks in those games. But in the 3 road games since, So all against not top four pass defenses. He's averaged 10.32 yards per attempt. Again, league average there is about 7.5. 0.47 passing net expected points per dropback. So almost four times the league average there. 8 touchdowns, no picks. And again, 49ers are beatable deep. His price is finally up a bit to 8,000 this week. He doesn't necessarily stack super well with any player, but we could get him without Doug Baldwin here in 3 games without Baldwin. Tyler Lockett has a 22% target share. Not a huge bump from his full season rate. David Moore wasn't really a factor early on, but did see his snaps jump back up to almost 80% last week without Baldwin. And on the other side of these things, we have George Kittle. We have potentially Jeff Wilson, if not for Matt Breida, some Dante Pettis. I kind of like this game if I'm looking outside the top two obvious games. So any interest in Russell Wilson or stacking this one up in any way? No.
Kinda. I don't like Russ that much.
What?
So he's really good. And I just hate the way the team uses him. So, like, he makes sense for game stacks because if the Niners score, Russ will throw, and that's good. But the Seahawks look like they'll be playing this game without DJ Fluker, the right guard. And Fluker is not good, but for some reason, their splits with and without him are disgusting this year. Fluker, like, in the games he hasn't played, their sack rate is 13%. And the games he has played, it's 7%. Like, I don't know if that's legit because it's small samples, but it does worry me quite a bit. And also, they just played San Fran 2 weeks ago. That was the week 13 game where Dante Pettis blew up. Fluker's not going to play because his hamstring is bummed. And Pete Carroll basically said he's not going to play. And if Pete Carroll says you're not going to play, like, he's the most optimistic dude in the world as far as injuries go. He's not going to play. I worry that this game could just be terrible and that the Seahawks could disappoint. So I can see myself stacking it because, like, there is a path if the 49ers get out front to it being kind of fun. But I have to talk myself into it, and I'm not super enthused about that when there are other games I don't have to talk myself into. Am I being irrational?
No, it's not like this is a full-on, like, cash game, stack it up.
Yeah.
But again, you know, outside of New England, Pittsburgh, and Indy and Dallas, like, we got to get a little bit weird somewhere. Russell Wilson doesn't really qualify as weird. I wouldn't play him in cash games because he is priced up on FanDuel at 8,000. But mm-hmm. if I'm looking for just game stacks, I like it. Both teams will. Seattle's not awful with their pace, 22nd in situation neutral pace, as I mentioned before. San Francisco is 11th. I think there's a path to some big plays here with Tyler Lockett and Dante Pettis. George Kittle, we know, is elite with his run after catch ability, mm-hmm. Especially if Matt Breida were to miss.
Miss, Wilson would be a really good play. I'd totally be down with him then.
Yeah. So, I think that if I'm looking outside of these two games, which maybe you can just tell me to play, you know, only players from this game from those two games, then I won't have to play any 49ers or Seahawks. But, you know, outside of that, I do think that this is going to be a game where I do target it.
The only Patriots, Steelers, Colts, Cowboys lineup is kind of fun. The flex is annoying because there are only two running backs I really want here in Zeke and Samuels, but, like, wide receivers are fun. I can get Eric Ebron in there. Get some Michael Gallup action. That's a pretty fun lineup. So you can do it. Just saying. Just throwing it out there. You can make it happen.
That's your cash game lineup, man.
It's not. I will say that. That is for sure. Let's move on to my fourth trend here. Close up shop for the trends. But talking about Joe Mixon, because prior to last week, I had written this dude off. He was losing work to Gio Bernard. He was playing with backups at quarterback and left tackle. Actually, third stringer at left tackle, without the best piece in their offense in A.J. Green. But I kind of think he forced me to change my opinion last week. Against the Chargers, Mixon set a new season high with 26 carries. He turned them into 111 rushing yards, giving him 3 straight games with at least 82 rushing yards. That is in addition to some work in the passing game. He had six targets there, which puts him at 12% of their targets since the A.J. Green injury. He's got 12% of the targets from Jeff Driskel this year, so it's not great, but not terrible. Now, Mixon goes back home for a day with the Raiders. They are number five's 30th ranked team against the rush and have allowed six different backs to get to at least 100 rushing yards against them, including some like DJ or David Johnson without DJ Humphreys got there like 137 yards, and that offense has been terrible outside of that. On top of that, Cordy Glenn, their left tackle, was back at practice on Wednesday, meaning they may have both Glenn and center Billy Price together for effectively the fourth time all season long. Mixon is $7,800, and that is costly, but he brings a good workload against a bad defense at home. Brandon, I like Mixon. Are you willing to pay up for him in this spot?
Yeah, it's really just for all the reasons you said. The workload's there. The matchup's good. He's safe, or seems safe, and that's more than you can say for kind of a lot of running backs this week because we have so many studs not on the main slate. It's kind of really all I have on Mixon. I think that he's sort of in the cash game mix. Overall, though, I think that I like this game more than I should.
Yeah, we're going to talk about
the I'm full embarrassed.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the full game and bookmaker info.
Is Mixon like a cash game play for you before we just gloss over him here?
If Jalen Samuels is the lead back in Pittsburgh, I don't need Joe Mixon because I think like I'm probably just going to jam in Zeke and Saquon this week.
Yeah.
So like it's really just that third person. And if I have Jalen Samuels, I don't need to pay up for Mixon, honestly. Yeah. So if James Conner plays, then I think it comes down to like Mixon and Dalvin Cook, which is frightening because Dalvin Cook is not safe, but like his target share is good. So I think there are only like five running backs I like for cash this week. Mixon is one of those five. That's how I put it.
Yeah. If you sort of scan down the list, like it's pretty rough. It's hard to pay $8,200 for Leonard Fournette when his team might
score.
Talk
about him.
Oh, okay.
Super flex stacks with Cody Kessler and Josh Johnson.
Oh boy.
This is going to be bad. All right, so we'll circle back to that in a second. But first, FanDuel has just added a brand new, never-before-seen slate to their NFL offerings, second half only. That is right. It is half the game, but all of the fantasy. Is your team not doing so hot at halftime, or maybe you've got a big win in the bag, and you want to double down in your lineup? Well, now you can draft a brand new team for just the second half of a single NFL game. To find one of the available half slates, just select the single game NFL game style. Look through the slate options. It is just one more way to win on FanDuel. Let's take a look at the bookmaker info for week 15. The Falcons head back home to face the Cardinals this week. They rank 10th in adjusted pass defense and are 16th in adjusted rush defense. Falcons here, 8.5-point favorites. They have a 26.25-point implied total, which is third highest in the main slate. The matchup isn't ideal, but the Cardinals have some injuries defensively. Matt Ryan and Julio Jones at home are always interesting plays. On the flip side, we get David Johnson against the 30th ranked running back pass defense by success rate allowed. So, Brandon, can you rely on any of the options here in a game with virtually no playoff implications?
Rely on no, but Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, David Johnson stack is something that I'm going to have exposure to in my tournament lineups for sure.
I hate this game. Like, it should be so good.
Nobody's going to pay up for Matt Ryan at 8,400.
I'm probably not going to either. David Johnson, I was prepared to totally write him off because DJ Humphreys just placed an IR and he doesn't get graded well by Pro Football Focus, but I think he's an important piece. But I looked at their splits on the Quan Edge with and without him, and like, or I guess I looked at Josh Rosen since the injury, and Rosen's been the exact same with DJ Humphreys out. David Johnson's been effectively the same. It's just like the offense hasn't scored outside of that Oakland game, and there DJ was awesome. He had 137 rushing yards. So like, In theory, I could talk myself into it, but they were just at home last week against Detroit. They scored 3 points, and Detroit's defense is arguably worse than Atlanta's. So, like,
yeah,
it's really hard for me to get there. Really hard.
So if I play like Matt Ryan, David Johnson, and Julio, I can just go chalky. I can play like
Jalen. That could be a Cooper lineup.
Yeah, that's like an Amari Cooper. And then if it's like, you know, they do anything, or if they, especially if they get to their ceiling, like, and Amari Cooper goes off, then it's fine. Yeah. But also, Amari Cooper's probably not going to like have no targets or anything. So right. I think that it's worth getting a little bit creative on a slate again, where just like 2 out of the 11 games look exciting.
So one game you think may be exciting that we should talk about is the game with the fourth highest total on the slate. That is the Bengals and Raiders.
Yeah.
Ha. The Bengals currently 2.5-point favorites with a total of 46 on FanDuel Sportsbook. However, the total did open at 3.5 points, according to Sports Insights, and 55% of the public bets are on the Raiders. We talked about Joe Mixon. Are you tempted by any Raiders in this spot, Brandon? And can you game stack this puppy?
Sorry, you wrote in the notes that the total opened at 3.5, and
that's appropriate.
I was... I was thinking that must have been for the Jacksonville Washington game, but
oh no, that would have been bet down by now.
1-0 somehow.
Yeah. Hey, it could happen.
I love Mixon. Any Raiders? I don't hate Derek Carr. If I'm spending down, he is at least somewhat viable. He's had at least 20 fantasy points from his passing in the past 2 games. Cincinnati is horrendous, just everywhere defensively. Jared Cook has actually had a pretty high floor, 10-plus FanDuel points, and I think 5 straight off the top of my head. He's seeing his snaps go up. And I hate to say it, but Doug Martin's been really steady.
Nope.
I know.
Line there.
I know. I'm just saying.
I was mildly interested in Derek Carr, but this is now an offensive line that I deem to be bad, and I am wary of teams with bad offensive lines on the road, and Derek Carr has not scored more than 16 FanDuel points on the road this entire season.
This also will be a 10 a.m. West Coast time for the Raiders, so keep that in mind.
I could use Jared Cook. I think that's it, though. Like, I honestly think that's it. Like, I could stack up Mixon and Cook.
Yeah, ultimately, that's probably where I'll wind up, is just Jared Cook, if I even get there. But I just would be lying if I said that I wasn't looking at this game long and hard.
Any Bengals outside of Mixon for this week?
Again, I'm not going to go there, but, like, Jeff Driscoll's thrown to CJ Uzama more than anybody else, and Oakland is like a 0.5 point worse per target than any other tight end defense. I'm not going to get there. Uzama hasn't even gotten to 9 FanDuel points yet, but I'd be lying if I didn't look at that either.
Uzama does have 6 deep targets since AJ Green got hurt, so his yardage has been terrible. I'm not going to use Uzama, but like, whatever. It's fine. He's a cheap tight end. I actually don't mind Tyler Boyd and John Ross, though. Boyd is 67, a direct pivot from Amari Cooper. I tried to combine pivot and Cooper, which just led to Pooper. But Boyd has 22.7% of their targets since AJ Green got hurt. He has 27% of the deep targets in that time. And he's probably going to get looks in the red zone against a really bad defense. John Ross, 17% of the targets since AJ Green got hurt, with 36% of the deep targets. And he gets bunny targets too, like towards the end zone. So like, I'll have both those guys. I'm going to have Mixon too. So like, I'm going to have some Bengals, but it's really hard for me to run it back with anybody outside of Jared Cook, I guess.
I have Boyd with no red zone targets since.
No, he has none. You're right.
Yeah.
But I think he's going to get some eventually. Like, I don't think that's like a design to not get there.
I mean, Oakland's very good on like the perimeter. They're terrible in the slot. So that's good for Boyd. So I don't know if I'll get to John Ross. He actually has 2 1-and-1 red zone targets his past 3.
And they're all at the goal line, basically. Every single one. I don't know why, but it keeps happening.
Yeah, they, yeah. Boyd at 6,700. I'm with you. Good pivot. I will have some Tyler Boyd, I would think.
Yeah. All right, let's move on here to the Packers and Bears. Packers not dead yet in the playoff race. The Bears pretty much locked in, so this game does carry some value. Also, big rivalry. The total here is 45 points. Bears 6-point favorites. About 66% of the bets have been on the under, which has caused it to move to 46.5 to 45, according to Sports Insights. So we have one of the few main slate games where teams are in the playoff hunt, but the total is trending down. So, Brandon, do you have any interest in either side of the ball here?
I've looked long and hard at this game. I don't hate Tariq Cohen, for sure. Maybe some Allen Robinson. And then Davante Adams is always in play. Mm-hmm. I don't even know how comfortable I feel with Aaron Jones. Like, in season long, you're just going to play him, but, like, I don't know how much Aaron Jones I'm going to have in DFS this week.
Yeah, I probably won't use him in DFS, honestly. Like, we've seen running backs with better usage than him bust. Like, Todd Gurley. Dalvin Cook doesn't have better usage, but, like, he completely busted against this team. For Allen Robinson, he has 22% of the targets since he came back. He has a pretty solid number of deep targets, too. Actually, Cohen has, I think he leads the team in targets since A-Rob came back. He's 68, and he has, like, these weird pop games. Robinson has 30% of the deep targets since he came back. So Robinson is 65, another guy who is a direct pivot off of Amari Cooper. Not a bad matchup. And if we assume Mitchell Trubisky's shoulder is healthier now than it was last week, that's pretty good. And we've seen Trubisky blow up at home. So I will have Mitchell Trubisky lineups this week at 79. I can't go heavy because I am concerned that his struggles on Sunday were due to the lingering shoulder issue. But I think in this spot, it does make sense to have some exposure.
Okay, if you're in on Trubisky even a little bit, I guess I have to get there. Cause
I've been in on him 1 week this year, and that was against Detroit, and he blew up for 36. So I still don't like him as a player, but as a DFS asset, we can be friends now. My best lineup that week had Trubisky, which was really upsetting. Like, I feel bad when a player I'm not super in love with allows me to benefit. Like, Brad Keselowski did me well in NASCAR once, and I was really conflicted. I considered giving the money back. Didn't do so. But I think Trubisky, A-Rob, Davante Adams stacks, or Trubisky, Cohen, A-Rob, or Davante Adams stacks, both those are in play for me this week. I won't have a ton of it, but I am very interested in them under the assumption that Trubisky is healthier this week.
That's like another, if you're going like Amari Cooper, Jalen Samuels, you know, assuming that Connor's out, Samuels is going to be very popular. So, like,
as he should,
you play that, you play that stack with some of the chalkier, more obvious options. It's not ridiculous, but it makes sense and it could hit.
All right. This week's toilet bowl is down in Jacksonville with the Jaguars hosting Washington. Here are those Superflex stacks. This game is wholly unappealing, but the Jaguars are 7.5-point home favorites. Washington is ranked 21st against the rush, according to NumberFire's metrics. They're 18th in success rate allowed to backs, and they have been getting slightly better recently, but still. Leonard Fournette's offensive line has been wrecked by injuries, but are you considering him here at $8,200?
I mean, I don't know. I don't think, maybe a sprinkle or two in tournaments. He played a season high 77.5% of the snaps last week. That's really all I can say. Again, in season long, you're just going to plug him in because he's got a good workload. But in DFS, I don't really see the path to like a huge game.
Yeah, I think this is the same. A similar situation to what he had against Buffalo a couple weeks ago. That was a game where he got tossed. But like, offensive line was wrecked by that. And I don't know if Andrew Norwell was hurt by that point, but it was either in that game or immediately before it. But in that game, Fournette had 24.3 FanDuel points and could have scored again had he not gotten tossed, because he got tossed when they were on like the 2 yard line. He's had 21 or more FanDuel points in 3 of 4 games since returning. The one exception was Derrick Henry night, and all those have been against good rush defenses. So he's a good tournament play this week, I think. And I think I'll wind up being around 20% with him because he's a volume-based play, but volume matters a lot in the NFL. And I know we make jokes about how he doesn't move the line, but like he actually has talent. Like I know we joke about it, but like and from a serious perspective, he has talent. So
yeah, I mean, Washington's not a run defense to avoid. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to have more Fournette than I thought when you first asked. Just not a ton. Mm-hmm. Certainly not in cash games. Is he okay?
No.
Yeah.
I can't trust anyone in cash when they're missing three of their four best offensive linemen. Josh Wells might be back this week, their left tackle. He's their backup left tackle because they've gone through like seven this year, which means they would need to start Eric Flowers. I believe Wells is eligible to come off of injured reserve. Yeah, it looks like he's going to be back this week. So that does actually upgrade their offensive line a tiny bit. But no Linder and Nora Norwell keeps it still bad. So
I guess if I'm gonna consider some Raiders, they have the same implied total as Jacksonville. So
let's ride, man. Cody Kessler in the GPP. Weather for this weekend, we could see some wind in Chicago for the Bears and the Packers. Current wind projection is just 12 miles per hour, so check back on that one Sunday morning. Not a big concern right now. There's a chance of rain at the Meadowlands for the Giants and Titans. Wind appears low at 9 miles per hour, though. Just worth noting to check back on it later. Rain is also possible in San Francisco for the Seahawks and 49ers. Looks like the rain odds increase as the game goes along. Wind speeds there, just 10 miles per hour, so no games on this slate with concerning weather as of right now. We'll check back on the Number Fire games and lineups page on Sunday to make sure that is still the case. Let's finish up here, Brandon, with our positional plays. Starting off at quarterback, who you loving there?
I'm just going to go with Ben Roethlisberger at the top. He's not getting enough buzz. Quarterbacks aren't generally overly popular, but I mean, if people are going to play like Josh Allen, that just gives me more reason to spend up for Ben Roethlisberger, really. Patriots 18th in adjusted pass defense. Again, Pittsburgh 6th when adjusted for opponent and per play. He's averaged 9.44 yards per attempt against bottom half pass defenses in 5 games. He's at home, he is, his efficiency's just been fine. It's been good, provided that he's, you know, cleared to go. I think that he's realistically the best quarterback play. Obviously, he's the most expensive, but you can still pay up for him. There's a heavy total here. You can stack him with at least 3 different pass catchers. You can even stack him with Jalen Samuels. So I think that there's a lot of reason to get excited about Roethlisberger this week. I also love Kirk Cousins. You talked, you know, in detail about this offense already, but I think that he's entirely overlooked right now. Miami's 29th in adjusted pass defense this year. Cousins coming off of 2 duds in a row. Everyone's looking to, again, like Josh Allen and some other options. Those were both road games. He struggled in primetime as well, and that always depresses ownership, or at least it seems to. But when Cousins has faced bottom 12 pass defenses, he's at 0.30 passing net expected points per drop back, 10 touchdowns, 2 picks in those games, really solid per yards per efficiency numbers. I think that he's going to be very low owned, and he also has some very obvious stack partners.
And he's playing the dome. Gotta love that. My first love is Tom Brady because he is the cheaper quarterback with access to that game. And like, I like Brady too, or Roethlisberger too. Just Brady's happens to be my love. He's had high level of efficiency in 3 straight games, including against a tough opponent, because the Vikings, ever since Everson Griffin came back, have been awesome. He had 15 net expected points in that game. All other quarterbacks facing Minnesota since Griffin came back have negative 14 net expected points. Like, that's insane, the split between Brady and the rest. The Steelers have struggled against efficient quarterbacks like Patrick Mahomes, Phillip Rivers, even Joe Flacco in Pittsburgh did well against them. So Brady is $7,900. That's far too cheap with how well he's playing. So give me some Tom Brady on Sunday. My second love is Dak Prescott. He is just $7,300. And he has 11 carries inside the 10-yard line since the Amari Cooper trade, and he had 1 all season prior to that. So I think this offense, like, there was a joke about how they asked Amari Cooper if he knew any fun plays in Oakland. I kind of think they actually did do that, and he actually made their offense more fun. Dak, facing the 25th-ranked pass defense, I will pair him with Zeke Elliott, stack those two together to pivot off of Cooper and get exposure to all the Cowboys touchdowns. I also have to shout out obligatory Marcus Mariota mention. He is $7,100. I like him less if OBJ doesn't play because it lowers the appeal of that game, but Mariota, fun. There we go. I did it. Let's move down to running back, Brandon. Who are you liking there?
I'm going to mention Ezekiel Elliott. I don't, you know, there kind of was a point in the early part and mid part of the season where I didn't mention the most obvious backs, but I do genuinely like cram in three elite backs. And there's kind of only two this week. So I want to make sure that I make it clear that I'm going to have a lot of Ezekiel Elliott this week at 8,800. He's a road underdog, but he's averaged 7.3 targets per game since the Cooper trade. He's been pretty much game script proof. He has scored at least 22.6 fantasy points in five straight games. He's averaged an 89% snap rate in that span. I mean, if the Cowboys get out ahead, they're going to ride Zeke. If it's tight or if they're trailing, they're going to give him a lot of work out of the backfield. So pretty much foolproof here at 8,800. So I'm going to have a lot of Ezekiel Elliott. I also love David Johnson. It's scary, but I know he didn't come through last week, but Detroit actually has some sort of mid-level, at least running back defense, both on the ground and through the air. But he's just 7,400. And despite all of his concerns, he's had at least 12 FanDuel points in eight games. He's averaged just 8.9 fantasy points over his past three, despite averaging 22.3 combined carries and targets per game. It's a pretty solid workload for sure. And I mean, the matchup with the Falcons is just too good to ignore. They're 32nd in adjusted rush defense. They're 28th in rushing success rate allowed to running backs. They're 30th in target success rate allowed to running backs. I know Johnson had like 400 targets for 1 yard last week against the Lions, but they're like a top 12 sort of pass defense allowed to running backs. So I think that Johnson's going to parlay those chances into production. And look, I had Jeffrey Wilson penciled in here, but it seems like Matt Breida should be back, so I'm just going to go with Jalen Samuels at 5,500. I don't care if he's popular. He's too cheap, and we've already seen it from him. Like I mentioned last week with Jeffrey Wilson, we had already seen it. He played 80% of the snaps last week, which was seventh highest among all running backs. He had 18 opportunities, seven of which were targets. He scored 12.7 fantasy points. Despite not scoring, it's just a great workload. And I mean, there are some kind of, I mean, if New England just tries to take out Antonio Brown and Juju, it's going to be basically just dump offs to Jalen Samuels.
Yeah. I love guys who can score points without touchdowns. Samuels is that. So I am very into him. And again, he'd be a cash game play for me if Connor sits. My first love is Saquon Barkley. Apparently Odell Beckham is seeing a specialist today, which is concerning, which means he might not play. But we saw last week that this Giants offense, unlike past years, can move the ball even when Beckham sits. So I still love Saquon Barkley. They have averaged 31.4 points per game since their bye week. And again, that does include one game without Beckham where they blew up. Barkley has 17% of their overall targets and 17% of their red zone targets in that time. The Titans are ranked 22nd in success rate allowed to backs since their bye week. So Saquon Barkley is always in play when the Giants are projected to score points. That is the case this weekend. So Saquon Barkley going to be a tremendous play to me, even if Beckham does sit, which seems more likely now than we initially started recording. My second love, I mentioned, you know, Zeke Elliott, I like him. I like Mixon, I like Fournette. But dropping down a bit more, only for tournaments, I do like Tariq Cohen. I love his role. Ever since Allen Robinson returned, Cohen has 22.7% of the Bears' targets. That is correct. He has 10.8% of their deep targets and 15% of the red zone targets. The Packers have allowed some production to pass catching backs, 81 receiving yards to Todd Gurley, 72 to James White, and at least 45 to Dalvin Cook in both those games. So Cohen doesn't ever leave a floor because there are games where they just go with Jordan Howard, and that is more likely the case if Mitchell Trubisky's shoulder is still hampered. But Cohen's been getting really good usage, and I want to try to capitalize that while he is priced at $6,800. My third love is Dalvin Cook. He has 15% of the team's targets since their bye week, and he's played 77% of the snaps in three of the past four games. The one down game from a snap rate perspective was the game where they played the Packers and won that game. So that is a mild concern, but I think that Cook is too talented to not be out there as often as he has been recently. If we look at his rushing success, it's been bad, but he has a 19% rushing success rate on runs at the middle compared to 36% on runs to the outside. Their new offensive coordinator may recognize that and be able to enhance his efficiency. And even if he doesn't get a boost there, he's still paying off for fantasy. So he's $6,200. I think that is too low, given his receiving down workload, his talent, and the matchup here against the Dolphins. So give me some Dalvin Cook in week 15. Let's move to wide receiver, Brandon. Who is catching your eye there?
I'm going to go with Adam Thielen at the top at 8,200. It kind of seems like he should be a focal point after, you know, the infamous not getting targeted for however long and that Sunday night game last week. But I mean, he still finished hot, and he's kind of been having a floor game more often than not lately. 12.1, 22.5, 11.3, 10.3 fantasy points in his four post-bye games. I think that corrects itself this week. Miami just gave up 86 yards and a touchdown on 12 targets to Julian Edelman. Thielen has one of the best workloads in football, and it just seems like maybe he's been, you know, not smashing just enough where people leave him a little bit under-owned this week. In the middle, I mean, it's Amari Cooper, obviously, but if I'm pivoting away, I think I like Tyler Lockett. I like Tyler Boyd as well, but I'd like Lockett maybe a little bit more. I probably shouldn't, but just from a tournament perspective, Lockett's maxed out at 7 targets in a game, but he still averaged 12.4 fantasy points regardless. He's actually only averaged 43.8 air yards per game since week 6, but he does have 9 deep targets since week 10. The 49ers, again, 31st in deep ball defense as measured by adjusted yards per attempt. He's just kind of defying like math with how consistent he's been based on his low volume. But again, San Fran can get beat deep. And if there's no Doug Baldwin or if Baldwin's hobbled, I like Lockett to kick into the slot. And that's where San Francisco's been extra vulnerable. At my third love, I'm going to stick in that same game and go with Dante Pettis at 5,500. Pettis has been, you know, in terms of season long, just sort of consistency to sort of give you like some perspective as to how consistent he's been. He's been the wide receiver 19, wide receiver 2, and wide receiver 22 in his past three games. He's played 90.6, 93.4, and 84.7% of the snaps, runs almost every route for San Francisco. Seattle is very tough in the slot. They're actually first in slot points per target allowed, but they're pretty torchable on the outside. So I like Pettis quite a bit, even at 5,500. And I guess I'll just throw out the name Zay Jones as well.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And Pettis at 55 for his workload's not bad. So I think that does make sense, especially if you like that game. My first love is T.Y. Hilton. I have not discussed him enough on this podcast. If we look at him since the team's bye week, Hilton has 27% of their overall targets and 45% of their deep targets. That has allowed him to get at least 125 yards in 3 of the past 4 games and at least 77 in each of those games. Byron Jones, the uber-talented corner for the Cowboys, does not shadow. And Hilton gets 27% of his snaps in the slot and 33% of his snaps on the opposite side of Jones, so he should avoid him. And athletic wide receivers have occasionally crushed this team this year. So T.Y. Hilton at home, indoors, love it, love it, love it for this week. My second love is Julian Edelman. He is decently close in price to Amari Cooper, which should at least help keep the ownership in check for Edelman. He's getting some buzz this week, but not enough to scare me away. He has 25% of their overall targets since the bye week, combined with 30% of the red zone targets, and he has still had yardage upside this year. The Steelers have struggled against slot wide receivers because they have this weird defensive scheme where they don't use their good slot corner against wide receivers. I don't know why, but like, hey. If it helps Edelman, it helps Edelman. So I think that he is pretty fun this week. Dropping way down at wide receiver, kind of like Taywan Taylor. He ran a route on 22 of 25 dropbacks from Marcus Mariota last week at a 68% snap rate overall. In the 2 games since Taylor returned, he has 21% of the team's targets, 40% of their deep targets, and he did get looks in the red zone earlier in the year. The Giants ranked 21st against the pass, but Landon Collins is now an IR, and they have essentially one good player in their secondary. He's probably not going to be covering Taywan Taylor. So I don't mind Corey Davis at 58, but Taylor is $4,900. I'm all about that life. So what has ever gone wrong with using the Titans on the road? Nothing. Let's go. It's going to be great. I'll move down to tight end, Brandon. Who do you like there?
Yeah, I picked out two road tight ends, which I always hate, but I mean...
It's a fun week, right?
Yeah, tight end's always great. If I can't pay for George Kittle or Rob Gronkowski or Eric Ebron, I will consider Jared Cook at 6,300. He has double-digit fantasy points in four straight games. I think I said five before. He has seven deep targets in that span as well. His snap rate was 85.1% last week. It's been trending up. He has 24% of the team's targets over the past five games. Not the worst game overall by any means for Jared Cook here in that sort of script. And I also have Cameron Brait at Baltimore at 5,400. It seems stupid. To recommend anybody against Baltimore in Baltimore, but the one sort of path to success against Baltimore is in the middle. The Ravens are more vulnerable to tight ends than to backs or wide receivers. They're 22nd in target success rate allowed to tight ends. That helps to sort of cling to Cameron Brait, who's had 4.7 targets per game since the OJ Howard injury. It's kind of all I can say for Cameron Brait. And again, just CJ Uzama is in the back of my mind with how bad the Raiders have been to tight ends.
Question for you. Would you use Chris Godwin here? He is 54. No DeSean Jackson, most likely. I should preface this by saying I did use DJ Moore against the Ravens earlier this year when Torrey Smith was out. So I'm not above like targeting someone in this matchup. Godwin's not going to carry any ownership. Would you consider it here?
What's his price?
He is 54.
That's right.
Brandon, he had 10 targets last week. How could anything go wrong?
Yeah, 10 targets, 173 air yards, three deep targets, two end zone targets. I believe Pat Thorman of Pro Football Focus tweeted that just one of those targets was catchable, yes. And that's the one he caught.
Yes.
But, I mean, Baltimore's let just 10 wideouts get to even double-digit fantasy points this year.
So you're saying there's a chance.
So you're telling me there's a chance. I mean, there is a chance with, like, his deep looks, but...
All right, fair enough. Let's move on to my tight ends here. I love Gronk, but Eric Ebron should serve as a bit of a pivot this week. I think people are just kind of, you know, sick of using him apparently. But in games without Jack Doyle this year, Ebron has 23% of the Colts' targets, 27% of the deep targets, and 29% of the red zone targets. He is a wide receiver who is tight end eligible. He also is in a decent game here. He's still cheap at $6,500, so I like Eric Ebron. I also like Vance McDonald. He is a good way to safeguard in case the Patriots do cover well against the two receivers. Same thing with Jalen Samuels. Ebron had 105 yards and two touchdowns against this defense, the same defense McDonald was facing. Trey Burton had a $126 on 11 targets. I think he's had 11 targets the entire year outside of that game. So McDonald is 55. He's a savings to get access to this game. So I do like Vance. If you want to spend down at tight end, I don't hate Blake Jarwin. He had a good snap rate last week along with seven targets, and he's 47. I think that he would be my cheap tight end, analogous to Brandon with CJ Uzoma. Let's finish up, Brandon, with defense. Who are you checking out there?
I like Buffalo. The Lions have been not good. They haven't scored more than 22 points in seven straight games. The Bills, they're a home favorite. They're eighth in quarterback hit rate to generate some pressure there. Speaking of pressure, according to Pro Football Focus, Buffalo is seventh in expected pressure rate based on, you know, adjusting for injuries and projected starters. Among teams on the main slate, they're seventh. Defensively, Detroit is ninth offensively. So there's enough there for me to buy into Buffalo as a 2.5-point home favorite. But it's worth saying that the high-end defenses, namely Baltimore and Jacksonville, look somewhat worth it for sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Matthew Stafford has – checked out. So yeah. The Bills defense is attractive. My cheaper defense is the Vikings because they're 7-point home favorites. And the defense has not been the issue here. It's been all about the offense struggling. So I love this defense here. The past two home games they have played with Everson Griffin, they have 22 FanDuel points and 7 FanDuel points. And that 7 came against Aaron Rodgers. Ryan Tannehill has been okay, but he's not Aaron Rodgers. So I think that $3,900 to the Vikings is way too cheap. They stack up well with Dalvin Cook. I would actually consider the Bears defense at 37, despite the fact they're facing Aaron Rodgers because they're the Bears. And a lot of injuries on the Packers offensive line. So the Bears are in play. I think the Falcons are at 4,000 are in play. So there are actually a good number of solid defenses this week. But my favorite does happen to be the Vikings. Brandon, I think this is a slate where there is a lot of strategy because you do want to stack games correctly and you have to figure out how you're handling Amari Cooper. I like those slates. So it's better than I thought it was earlier in the year, but it's not an easy slate by any means.
No, certainly not easy. It's not impossible. There are some games that maybe you can more or less write off, but I guess the more I look at it, there's like an angle to sort of even every game here.
There is not an angle to Jags Washington. Do not tell me that.
Well, the Fournette.
Oh, okay, cool. That's
like fine. There's like a viable play, I think, in at least every game. So there's that, but obviously you just want to get creative with your Cowboys, Colts, Patriots, and Steelers this week.
Absolutely. I think that's the way to play it. We'll be back on Monday to recap everything. That'll be our final recap podcast of the year because we get into the holiday season after that on Mondays, so we will not be around on Mondays. So final recap pod of the year. You can get that by subscribing to the Number Fire Daily Fantasy podcast feed on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app. Again, recap pod is on Monday to break down all that went down in week 15. Brandon, if people have questions for you on Twitter, where can they find you there?
I'm at Gdula13, Gdula13.
And I am at Jim Sonnes, Jim Sonnes. You can also follow the Number Fire Podcast Network at Number Fire Pods, P-O-D-S as in podcast. Do want to thank you all for tuning in for today. Good luck as you are filling out your DFS lineups for week 15. Hopefully get some action on the Saturday slate as well. And we'll talk to you again on Monday to talk about how it went down. This has been the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast powered by Number Fire.